Blog Talk Radio.
Jean-Luc, Jordy Specs, mysteries on the holodecks, asteroids, triple droids, telepathic betazoids, transporter, deadly claw, visitor from L.A. Law, photons, no Kirk, captain has gone berserk, shuttlecraft, Council Troy, Dr. Crusher's little boy, Klingon rights, parasites, new heights, phaser fights, Data's head, Tasha's dead, Riker's hanging by a thread, celebration, transformations, everyone to battle stations.
Next generation on your favorite station. We start the series, but when we are on, it appears beyond. We start the series. It's the next generation on your favorite station. We start the series.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Comic Corner, a special edition, I guess you want to say. We're going to be doing two Comic Corners this month, and we're not going to be on our usual month because Star Trek Picard is having a red carpet premiere, and our very own Eric and Charles are going to be there, so we had to move Comic Corner, plus a lot of the dates for the comic books we want to talk about have been moved all over the place, and we want to make sure we give you guys a good, even show without having to cram too many books into too little time and not giving them the time they deserve. So we're going to actually have two Comic Corners this month. Today, right now, we're going to talk about Star Trek Voyager, Mirrors and Smoke, which was done by our awesome friend, J.K. Woodard. And we're going to talk about Star Trek Year 5, Issue Number 9. Now, next week, next Monday, Charles and Eric are going to be at the Star Trek Picard red carpet premiere in California, in Los Angeles. And they're going to be seeing the first two episodes of Star Trek Picard. So they won't be available for Comic Corner. But on the 20th, which is the following Monday, we are going to have an extra special Comic Corner where we're going to be talking about Star Trek Picard Countdown Issue Number 2 and Issue Number 3, which lead up to Star Trek Picard, the series, which is going to air on Thursday the 23rd. We're also going to try to do a Trek Talking show on Star Trek Picard once we find out what time it's going to air, if we can squeeze it in before showtime or not. All up in the air right now, but we'll keep you guys in the loop. So that's what's going on, and that's why we're here with you today. That's why we're not going to be with you next Monday, but we'll be back with you the following Monday. So I hope you're thoroughly confused now, just like I am. So you can always check our Facebook page to clarify any of the information I just gave you. And something that I said on Stunt Treks with Leslie Hoffman last night and something that I said on Trek Talking last Thursday, I'm going to say right here on Comic Corner because it pertains to you guys as well. Anybody that's listening to this podcast from Ireland, that's right, from Ireland, because on Trek Talking, we do around the globe. And for the first time in all the years that we've been doing the show, we had a change, a massive change in the countries that listen to our podcasts around the globe. And that change was Ireland jumped from nothing all the way up to fourth place. They knocked Spain off the list and knocked Germany down a notch. And that's just phenomenal to all of our listeners in Ireland. So as my way of saying thank you to you guys in Ireland, I am offering to you right now the first person that goes to Trek Talking and Beyond on our Facebook page, or even the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page, and shoots us a message and says, hey, I'm listening in Ireland, and it doesn't have to be right now. It could be tomorrow. It could be Sunday. It depends on when you're listening to this podcast or one of our others. Shoot us a message, and I will drop in the mail to you an autographed Lieutenant Arium 8x10 signed by Sarah Mitch, who played her in Season 1, and that's my way of saying thank you for your support. And all you got to do is shoot us a message and say, I'm from Ireland. I listen to your podcast, and I'll drop that in the mail to you. So there you have it. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. And we're going to be talking about Star Trek in the comics on the Star Trek edition presented by Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York. With me as usual. Well, not as usual because Charles is at the dentist, so he won't be with us. But I have with me Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I am doing quite well. The weather has been kind of rainy and cold all day, so it's a good day to kind of hunker down and turn on the heater and talk about some Star Trek comics.
Hey, what could be more fun?
That's what I'm talking about.
And we also have with us TJ from Freakopolis Geekery. How you doing, TJ?
I'm doing very well. It's good to be back to talk about some comic books.
It is fun to do Comic Corner. I enjoy all the diversity that we have going on with all of our different podcasts, because each night I get to talk about something different with someone different, which is always fun. So, TJ, why don't you dive right in and get us started? You want to start with Year 5, or do you want to start with Voyager?
Oh, that's a good question. Let's do Year 5 and talk Voyager afterwards, I think, because there's plenty to talk about there. Not that there isn't with Year 5. It's a really strong issue. Again, this book continues to be making waves, as it were, I think, is appropriate for this week's issue. So we've got Star Trek Year 5, issue number 9, story by Jim McCann and art with a script by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly. So that means somebody proposed like a general arc, and then these guys, Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, put it to paper and really, put the words that went on the page down in order for the artist to work with that. That artist is Sylvia Calfano. And this is, if I'm not mistaken, the start of sort of a new arc for this book. It's not like a new trade arc, but as these this series has been running, it's been sort of like every two issues we get a sort of act one of a story and the act two of a story, and then it moves on to something that continues from where we left off, but is kind of has new problems posed and a bit of a new situation for the crew of the Enterprise as they're on their fifth year of exploring. And there's a little blurb here at the beginning. The crew of the Enterprise was able to successfully fight off the Tholians and escape from the web, but at a terrible cost. Captain Kirk was gravely injured and now lays in a coma, fighting for his life. As Bones tends to the captain, the Enterprise makes a detour toward their new friend Aal's homeworld, unaware of the dark threat looming on the horizon. That dark threat, of course, is the antagonist that we have begun to learn a little bit more about throughout this second arc of the book. And so we open with Sulu and Aal, the Icosan that was also caught in the Tholian web, sort of sharing a bed and sharing sweet nothings with each other as they begin to get to know each other in Sulu's quarters and are embracing and have really seemed to come into a sort of relationship. And we talked about its sort of pleasant surprise in the last issue. We thought that was really impactful and very timely in terms of some of the conversation surrounding their relationship and stuff. And it's cool to see them continuing to build upon that and strengthen that bond. And I thought this was really sweet. Unfortunately, though, we learn quickly as we turn the page that Aal is beginning to calcify, which is something that happens to their species if they're away from the waters of Icos, their planet, their home planet, for too long. And we also learn that that planet, some people choose to go through that process and live above the water on their planet and sort of it's this really great metaphor for getting sort of not being open to new ideas and to changing your position on things as the Icosans that go through calcification become sort of hardened to anything new and the fluid changing ways of the Icosans that happen to live under the water. And so throughout that that conversation with Sulu and Aal, we get a all hands alert as the ship has entered planetary orbit above Aal's planet of Icos. We learn a little bit about the planet at large, very, you know, as you would in sort of the original Star Trek. It's an M-class planet, lots of oxygen, about 1.8 billion living members of the sentient race, and they decide to take a, despite the planet being divided, they're going to head down there to the surface level and send an away team to sort of hopefully help Aeol, you know, become reacquainted and make some first contact, because they are a warp-capable civilization. But that crew is not going to include Captain James Kirk, as he is still recovering from his sort of spacewalk on the Tholian web. He and Bright Eyes are in sickbay attempting to recover from the last arc's exposition, or expedition, rather. So Aeol and Chekov, Sulu, and Spock head down to the surface, as it were, of Icos, this water planet, mostly water anyways. And we learn that, they land there, and we learn a little bit more about the planet, as the oxygen is, or the water is rich in oxygen, and as such, the away team is able to dive down underneath the planet. You get this great splash page, just full of them today, of the underwater city. Really beautiful environmental scene, as we see the away team floating above the city and learn a little bit about Aeol's home. Chekov, throughout this book, seems a little obstinate, or I don't know, he's put off by the whole thing. It starts here when he's unwilling to breathe in the oxygen-rich water, but eventually he relents, and they make their way down to the crest, which is the home of all of Aeol's species knowledge. It's from here they are birthed and where they return. So it's sort of a spawning grounds for the species there. And through that, another great moment between Aeol and Sulu, in terms of, you know, nothing quite like seeing a loved one in their, you know, sort of home, right? And we get a little bit of that. And we also meet the leader of the underwater Icosans, the, let's see, what is their name? Sorry.
It's Brynni, B-R-Y-N-I.
Yeah. Chancellor Brynni, I believe. Something. Yes, Speaker of the Crest, Brynni. So sort of another, you know, the leader of presumably the Icosans, and the one that is going to meet with the Lokari, who are the surface dwellers on this planet, to hopefully end this cold war that the two sides of the species are at. And so they set out to the above ground, essentially, to meet the Lokari, the dried out, calcified members of their species. We get this little kind of humorous cantina scene, bar scene, where they're very much welcomed. It's not often that Icosans are seen on the surface, we learn, but they hatch a plan to sort of stay hidden, and in the hopes that this conversation goes smoothly between the Icosans and the Lokaris, and they are able to begin to form a relationship. Unfortunately, pretty quickly, Sulu is discovered to obviously not be Icosan or Lokari. They're an off-worlder, and that brings guns are drawn, or phasers are drawn, and the mission is sort of attempted to abort. But unfortunately, a Lokari pulls the trigger on Chekov's phaser and stuns the Lokari chancellor, you know, clearly ruining the negotiations and causing Chekov to feel quite bad. Though he did draw his gun, and that's as I was saying, he was kind of obstinate throughout this whole issue, that you know, slight aggression or stubbornness caused him to you know, sort of maybe jump the gun, I think. So the Lokari chancellor is shot. Brynni of the Crest and Aeol and the away team quickly retreat back to the water, and the Lokari begin to unleash the sea burners, and you know, this has turned the Cold War into what is now essentially a hot war, and they are vowing to destroy the seas and really put an end to the Icosan's existence. And for a final page, as this is kind of just part one of a two-part story, we get Spock calling to the Enterprise. We get Sulu sort of, you know, reaming out Chekhov and Aol trying to talk him down. But Aol, despite that, seems or Breeny, despite that, seems kind of crestfallen. they have not much hope left for negotiations and the start of this relationship between the two sides of the species. So a really classic feeling issue, I think. You know, it's an away team, but you get these nice tie-ins to what has been going on in the book previously, with Bright Eyes being present and Aeol's and Sulu's relationship building, and Captain Kirk being out of commission for a little bit, which I found really enjoyable. You know, Kirk is a great guy, obviously, super strong captain, but he's also a really strong personality, and I don't know that that's exactly what this mission needed, so I was happy to see Spock take the helm. I thought that was really cool. The planet's really fun. The underwater scenes are really vibrant and beautifully illustrated. In general, the art in this book has really, really great contrast and coloring and, you know, strong, striking imagery. So I think they really nailed it there. And the story was fun. It's you know, the meat of the story feels very classic Star Trek, but those character moments really make it stand out. And this book continues to be really strong, in my opinion. I think they're building up to something really cool. This felt, you know, it's not a lot of movement on the stuff that's the greater stuff that's been happening outside of the mission-to-mission stuff, but nice nods to it and really, really strong character moments, I think. So that does it for Star Trek Year 5, issue number 9. As you guys can tell, I quite liked it. What did you guys think?
Well, I want to start off with the cover. I love the cover of this. First of all, like TJ said, it has Captain Kirk on the cover, who's not in the book, which I find interesting. But more interesting than that is the way they did the cover. It's not, if it was going to be in black and white, then Sulu and Aiel would be in color and everyone else would be black and white. But instead of doing it in black and white, they did it in, I don't know, underwater in color, I guess is the best way to say it. The contrast between the rest of the characters being Spock, Chekhov, and Kirk are all underwater, and they're kind of like an aqua blue-green type of thing with bubbles around them to signify they're underwater. But right in the forefront is Sulu and Aiel in an embrace, and they're in full color, which I thought was a really cool contrast for what's going on in the book. So I really liked the cover. It really caught my attention. And they did a really, really good job with catching the essence of the book. And the artwork, as TJ said, is just phenomenal. As you flip through the book, the colors are vibrant. They just bounce right off the page at you. The panels are very easy to follow. They're not jumping all around. So they're very, it's your very traditional comic book in this particular issue. And as TJ said, the splash pages are just outstanding. When we see the city, it's just, like I said, it jumps right off the page. The colors, it's just, it's, they did a fantastic, fantastic job on the coloring here. The story was enjoyable as well. I found it, I kept thinking, do you guys ever see the Pirates of the Caribbean movies?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Some of them.
Okay,
yeah.
You know, the when they're on the Black Pearl and they the guy's father is a like an old, what is he, a crusty like a piece of crab or coral type of thing.
Oh yeah.
I when I'm looking at these surface dwellers and the water breathers, they kind of reminded me of those dried out coral creatures from Pirates of the Caribbean. Because they moved on top of the land, they lost all their color. So where Aiel is all bright red and bright blues and bright greens and vibrant, the surface dwellers are just a dull purple. and they're all crusty and hard like a piece of coral. So I felt I really liked the contrast between the underwater dwellers and the above water dwellers. And another thing I wanted to touch on and see what you guys thought, because I was a little bit, I don't know what I thought, but when Aiel talks to Sulu and Sulu says, well, you know, I'm a man, and Aiel says, well, it's a shame that you identify yourself that way and you're not more liquid like we are. And I was, so am I safe in assuming that this race is asexual? They change.
That's not necessarily asexual, but they're definitely they have multiple sexes. And she Aiel talks in the last book about how they've got some fluidity to them. Either way, so I would say that they have, if anything, they almost represent like all sexes, or because they're definitely not asexual. There's definitely some like she's very much in a relationship with Sulu.
They're not shapeshifters though. When she's talking about being liquid, they're not like Odo. They don't turn into other creatures.
I don't think so. Although Aiel does appear to kind of get like a little bigger and more magnificent in one panel about halfway through the book. It's when they first go underwater and discover everybody can breathe. And there's kind of this panel where Aiel's at the bottom of the page and they've got their arms out and they say from stars they come. I almost wondered if the rejuvenating effects of the water just kind of accentuated every part of their physiology, or if they actually changed a little bit. There certainly was another creature in the previous panel. So maybe I got the feeling that maybe there is some changing that can happen over time based on the needs of the creature. I don't know. What do you think, TJ? Is that what you got too? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think fluid is the right way to use it, and I don't think they're quite, you know, like Odo, but there was a point made that once they sort of rejoined the Icosan waters, it brought about a bit of a vibrancy to them, and I think that fluid nature is more like, you know, just an openness to the situation at hand, and that's highlighted both in their, you know, willingness to negotiate with the Lucari and their willingness to accept off-worlders and stuff like that, compared to the calcification that the Lucari are going through, is, you know, kind of a metaphor for their inability to be accepting of new ideas and new people and new thoughts, and you know, that they're so stubborn that they're willing to burn it all down because of that. And I think it's, you know, a very poignant sort of timely political message, frankly. I don't know. There's clear analogs there for me. You might read it differently, but overall, I think this has a lot to say in terms of sexuality and openness to new ideas and things like that. There's like an environmental message as well. So, you know, this is just chock full of sort of social statements, I think. And frankly, I'm a fan. I know some people don't like that in their comics. That's fine. There's plenty of comics out there without them. I think, you know, it's doing a really good job of exploring a lot of those ideas.
But
yeah,
this
I think
is a Star Trek comic, so we expect that in our Star Trek.
I think
yeah. And I think that it's important, TJ, that exactly what you're saying, you know, maybe political is a loaded word, but I think the fact that, you know, Gene Roddenberry kind of defined himself as a humanist and as kind of, you know, thinking a lot about the potential that human beings have within themselves and the ways that we can self-evolve to make ourselves either more accepting of one another or just frankly like able to get along and kind of live in a post-scarcity society together. And so I do think that we tend to think of maybe some of those things as values along a political spectrum, but it's also just about being a human being, right? And just treating each other with respect. Or in this case, you know, Sulu's willingness to really engage in what seems like a pretty kind of like deep and meaningful relationship pretty quickly with a member of a different species, which I think is pretty interesting. Also, it kind of makes it transcend the whole human paradigm a little bit when you start throwing in other species as well.
And there was one other parallel that I wanted to point out before we hear from Jamie on this book. Something when Star Trek Beyond came out and Sulu leaves the bridge of the Enterprise on Yorktown Station, we find out that Sulu has a daughter, which is no shock because we know he has a daughter in the regular timelines named D'Amora. But what we didn't know is that Sulu has a husband in the Kelvin timeline. And, you know, George Takei was upset by that fact that they made Sulu gay in the movies, which didn't bother me. But the point that I'm trying to make is when that controversy came out, I dared anybody. I said, please go back and find for me any instance anywhere of Sulu having any relationship with anybody, talking about a date, anything like that. Find me anything that would prove his sexuality. Anything. Doesn't exist. It's not there. Sulu never went on a date. He never mentions a girlfriend, never mentions anything like that. So to have the comic book center on a sexual relationship with Sulu is something that was never done on the television series. And I think that's great that they're exploring these characters in ways that they never were before. Unless maybe the year four comic books, which we didn't read, maybe they did that in the year four comic book. I don't know. But as far as the TV series and the movies go, Sulu never had a girlfriend or a date or any relationship with anybody until now. So I think that's pretty cool. Jamie, what did you think about this book?
Yeah, I was pretty impressed with it. It was nice to see that Sulu is finally exploring his sexuality, I guess you could say, and of course learning about this music, that he could explore new worlds. I did actually like that page where they the fish guy, I think it's Ola, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but anyhow, I like the way in which they introduced that, because he's like, well, how do you breathe underwater? I mean, they didn't exactly have scuba diving gear on, so I thought that was neat that they used the water as oxygen without any oxygen tanks. And then, of course, Sulu again is just having a ball, and everyone else just seems to be just amazed at the fact that they're not drowning under the water in that specific part of the book, which I thought was cool. And then overall, I'm gonna say the same thing. I thought this book was very well done, and I would highly recommend reading it. I'm gonna go ahead and give this one an 8 out of 10. Sounds fair.
8 out of 10. Eight Enterprises. 8 Enterprises. How about you, TJ? How many? What do you think about your final score on this book before we move on?
I thought this was a really strong issue. I think, let's say 8.5. I want to leave some headroom, I think, in case this book continues to get better and better.
8.5 Enterprises. Eric, what about you?
Well, overall, I agree with pretty much everything you all said about the book. I love the colors. The art was amazing. The story was really good. But the one thing that I was completely missing, you remember how the last issue ended? Gary Seven, right?
With Gary Seven.
He was completely missing from this issue. And so we got zero resolution of that setup. That being said, like TJ was saying, this book kind of continues to build on itself. So we're going to see Bright Eyes in the future. We're going to see Gary Seven in the future. We're going to see recalls back to some of these first few issues that we've been going through. So I really enjoyed this book. I must admit, when I turned to that first splash page of the two of them laying in bed, I happened to be on a plane and I was kind of like, felt like felt like I was reading a romance novel or something, and somebody was over my shoulder. It's like, wow, what a scene. But I thought it was beautiful overall. So yeah, I think eight and a half feels about right for this book. It didn't completely knock my socks off, but it was really solid. And I like the interaction mostly between Sulu and Ayal, and then also Sulu and Chekhov. I thought Chekhov's role in this one was kind of interesting as the fall guy.
Yeah, you know what? I'm right there with you guys too. Eight and a half I think is perfect. The colors are really vibrant and well done. The panels is laid out very well. And this is issue number 9, which means we'll see issue number 10 to wrap this up. Issue number 11 and 12 would be the final episode. And then normally they have an annual, most comic books do. And I would assume that the annual would be the one that where we would wrap up who had the gun to Kirk's head in the very first issue that we read that we still mm-hmm. don't know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Gary Seven, and usually they save all those big reveals for, you know, a big, you know, annual issue usually. Right, TJ? I mean, generally speaking,
every company's got a different sort of way of doing that, but 12 would be the end of an arc, and it will we would expect it to have some large impact for sure.
So yeah, so you know, I'm right there with you guys. I'm going to say 8.5. I think is a really good number for this book, and we'll have to move on and see how they wrap it up in issue number 10. But before we move on to Star Trek Voyager, Mirrors and Smoke, we have to listen and have a little quick break from our sponsors.
This podcast is brought to you in part by the Freakopolis Geekery, the premier upstate New York comics and game shop. Centrally located between Saratoga Glens Falls, Ticonderoga, and Rutland, Vermont, the Geekery is a haven for pop culture and science fiction fans. For Star Trek fans, the Geekery features board games like Ascendancy, as well as awesome gaming titles like Star Trek Adventures RPG from Modiphius, Star Trek Away Team's HeroClix, and of course, Star Trek Attack Wing ship-to-ship tactical combat for the tabletop. The Geekery hosts casual play sessions, learn-to-play sessions, and sanctioned organized play tournaments with limited edition prize support. You'll also find comics and trade paperbacks at Freakopolis, including Star Trek titles from IDW. Lots of issues are in stock, and special orders are no problem. Whether you visit in person by shuttlecraft, or beam in online to Freakopolis.com, you'll find yourself right at home at the Freakopolis Geekery.
Boy, TJ, that sounds really professional, doesn't it?
I think it does. Yeah.
His voice is so smooth.
I know. It's like ought to be like an announcer or something like that. It's really sounds really good. So the next book that we're going to talk about is another one of the Star Trek one-shots, Star Trek Voyager Mirrors and Smoke, and it's the Star Trek Voyager trip into the mirror universe, kind of like we saw with Broken Mirror way, 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 way back, or Mirror Broken, I'm sorry. And I'll let TJ jump right in and fill us in on the details of Star Trek Voyager Mirrors and Smoke. Take it away, TJ.
Yeah, so as you said, this is a one-shot in the Mirror Universe. These started, I think, in 2017 with a free comic book day comic, and we've since gotten three miniseries and maybe another separate one-shot. And this is the newest addition to that, taking a look at the Mirror Universe and what some of the stuff in the sort of Next Generation era would look like, since we, you know, haven't really been exposed to them in the previously throughout the shows. We get to take a look at that stuff in the comics. And this is written by Paul Allor, with art by J.K. Woodward, who is a good friend of the shows and Freakopolis's, and he's done the art for many of these. He's done the cover for a bunch of them as well, and he's really bringing it here, I think. We get to take a look, since you did talk about a little bit about the cover for Star Trek Year 5, number 9, I wanted to talk about the cover to this one as well. We get the great shot of the Voyager crew sort of beaming down to a planet with the Voyager flying overhead, and it's a great introduction to what to expect from their new looks, because the character designs in these books, these Mirror Universe books, are you know, always super fun to see and pretty key to the vibe and the storytelling. And yeah, everybody is looking suited up and a little maybe more heavily armed than usual in their leather. And we've got some people, you know, clearly missing from the front. There's no Neelix, you know, off the bat comes to mind. But you'll see why a little later on in this book. So yeah, really striking cover, you know, gives you the what to expect from the get-go, which cover should, and kind of intrigues with the new character design. So really cool, brings that classic J.K. Woodard, very painterly style to it. I think he uses gouache, maybe. I would be remiss to know, but yeah, a great cover to this. And knowing that it's a one-shot, you know, you that's a really strong entry point, and it tells a whole story, as we'll see. So I'll read the little blurb here at the front. The year 2372, rebel ship Voyager, captained by Catherine Janeway, an escaped slave from a brutal Cardassian mining facility, is flung halfway across the universe. Stranded in the Delta Quadrant, Janeway and her ragtag rebel crew are faced with a choice: find their way home or quietly forge a new life far away from Klingons, Cardassians, and the Rebellion. Janeway chooses the third option. The Voyager will stay. The Voyager will plunder. The Delta Quadrant will be hers, and she will be its pirate queen. A year later, she is well on her way. When? We open with a ship-to-ship combat. We see the Voyager attacking the Baxial with a tractor, or with a shuttlecraft in its tractor beam, and the bridge crew of the Voyager sort of assessing the situation. And, you know, kind of complimenting the Baxial as it can take a beating. As we flip the page, we find out some familiar faces. Neelix happened to be captain of this ship, and we learn that it has been sort of following the Voyager, is the implication, I suppose, and picking up its scraps while Janeway and her crew plunder the Delta Quadrant, as it's as we heard her goal would be. But after taking a beating, Neelix decides to let the shuttlecraft that he has in a tractor beam, well, he doesn't let it go, but they have a little conversation about it, as this shuttlecraft apparently is holding a human, which is not often seen in the Delta Quadrant, obviously. And with some fancy maneuvering and some heavy weaponry, the shuttle escapes from Baxiel's force shield, and they beam the passenger onto the bridge. As the passenger lands, we realize it is Annika Hansen, and she's quite relieved to find a Terran ship out here in the Delta Quadrant. She is completely and utterly human at this point. She's, you know, no Borg augments or anything. So that's just one of those changes from that we get in the Mirror Universe. And apparently her parents were captured by the Borg. They were captured by the Borg. Thought they'd found a way to evade the sensors, but they were wrong, and her parents were assimilated. And she's been kind of surviving on her own ever since. And that is when we learn that the crew of the Voyager and presumably the Terran Empire at large are not familiar with the Borg. So presumably the stuff with Acutis and did not occur in the Terran universe. Janeway kind of brushes them off, thinking they sound kind of ridiculous. She demands or orders that Annika stays in sick bay for the next week for observation. And after that, things begin to go a little haywire on the ship. The replicators are trying to poison the crew. Gravity flips around at a moment's notice, and the sick bay is full of injuries and unwell crew members. And that is presumably, you know, they kind of assume the crew assumes it is due to Annika. She has some capabilities that they're unaware of or something, and is causing these malfunctions on the ship. But the doctor insists that's likely not the case. He's not sure what's going on. So they have a sort of a meeting with Tuvok and the rest of the bridge crew in the ready room to determine that well, they're going to have to take a fine-tooth comb to some of the stuff that they've recently picked up, and if they can't figure it out, then they transport her into space. And if the problems continue, then they'll know that you know, there's something still remaining, that some stone left unturned. And as some crew members take to a shuttle bay, the bay doors are opened, and many crew members are sucked out into the cold void of space as others are, find ways to sort of cling to something, although Chakotay is kicked aside, betrayed in a very Terran fashion, and sent out into space, and Chakotay kicks somebody out into space, and is left to freeze out there in the vast coldness. As such, Chakotay takes a moment to locate Annika Hansen, currently in sick bay, and we learn that she was part of the root cause of all these malfunctions on the Voyager, but really it was the doctor who has sort of taken her under his wing and begun to betray the crew, as he's learned to control certain portions of the ship. While the rest of you treated me like a program, she treated me like a person and was able to gain sentience and communicate with the ship and sort of take the fight to the crew members and, you know, like kind of commit mutiny through the ship. He lets out all the oxygen in the ship, and the crew members have to use their spacewalk suits in order to hopefully take the fight back to him and put an end to his betrayal. And as he does that, a rogue ship from Neelix, a rogue shuttle, crashes into the hull of the ship as they beam aboard, and Neelix and his first officer,
Kes.
Sorry, I can't remember her name.
Kes,
yeah. They land on the ship and begin to take advantage of the Voyager crew's sort of, you know, busy nature at the moment. They're quite indisposed by trying to deal with a doctor. But she's able to use her sort of manipulation of the light spectrum to rid themselves of the doctor for at least a moment, but that doesn't stop Neelix and Kes from becoming under attack as they try to commandeer the ship themselves. Unfortunately, they take some people to the brig, but the doctor seems to have been like reset for now, potentially, no longer a threat to the ship. So we've kind of dealt with the doctor at this point, but are now dealing with Neelix and Kes. And, you know, obviously they want a piece of that ship because it's been, they've been eyeing it for some time. So as Neelix and, Tuvok and Janeway are in the brig currently, sort of at the whim of Neelix and Kes, Janeway calls for a Protocol 7, which is the doctor who comes to incapacitate the interlopers, having been reset. He takes out Kes pretty quickly, Janeway dispatches Neelix, and they are now placed in the brig along with Annika Hansen. And they kind of allude to planning the next move on how to escape from this situation. As such, the kind of crew of the Voyager has won, in a sense, and begin to take over the Baxial and begin to sort of form a small fleet of ships to raid the Delta Quadrant with. And we leave off with Janeway looking to go find the Borg. So maybe you're going to have a run-in with the Borg, and hopefully, I imagine, we'll incorporate some of their technology and glean what they can from them in order to make themselves even more powerful and able to attack, you know, wreak havoc throughout the Delta Quadrant. So overall, you know, it's like a five-act story. You know, it's very, very Voyager, I think, with that mirror twist. Lots of goings on. It might be more pages than a standard comic book. The production quality is definitely higher. I think the paper and the binding and the cover product is really, really nice. The writing is super fun. It gives you that Star Trek with an edge that you expect from the Mirror Universe. But the shining star, as always, is J.K. Woodard's artwork. He brings a really unique style to his work that you don't get in a lot of other comics because it is all him. He does the, you know, penciling and inking and coloring, as it were. I know that's not his exact process, but, you know, he does the complete top to bottom sort of process, and that shows. And it's interesting. It's really fitting for the Mirror Universe, I think, because it's this isn't a slight, but it's more muted and darker in tone, and that's due to the medium he works in, I think, and that is very fitting for the Mirror Universe. I think that those grays and dark blues and you know, deep reds and stuff really fit the tone of this kind of otherworldly, maybe edgier side of Star Trek. So I think that works really, really well. Plus his character faces and the ability, the detail he brings to these things is really, really strong too. You know, it's not just fitting for the book, it's really great art as well. So yeah, I mean, super, super fun book, great one shot. I would be curious to see if we get some more of these. You know, the first one shot for The Next Generation brought about three miniseries. I could see this being a miniseries as well. Clearly, they're setting up something to go after the Borg with, so that would be really fun. And overall, I'm quite pleased with this. I think it's a strong addition to the Mirror Universe stuff, and I'm glad we finally got our hands on it.
Yeah, I think that as usual, J.K. did a phenomenal job on the artwork. I like his watercolor technique. This is the same technique that we were introduced in, like as TJ said, with the Mirror Broken way, 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 way back for Free Comic Book Day. And that got this whole ball rolling. And I think J.K. just knocks it out of the park. The artwork, the textures, the characters, everything is spot on. I do want to say the officer that Tuvok kicks out the airlock, for those of you who don't remember, is First Officer Cavott. And he was the first officer in the first episode of Voyager. And during the attacks, he's killed, and then the crews merge, and of course, Chakotay becomes her first officer. Well, since none of that happened, he's currently her first officer until Chakotay kicks him off the airlock. So that's how they get rid of that character in the Mirror Universe. Overall, I really enjoyed the story. I really enjoyed the arc. The panels, just like the other book, really flowed really, really nice. The introduction of Kes and Annika, because Seven of Nine and Kes never actually got to meet, I don't believe, because Kes left the show before Seven came along. So to see them together was pretty cool. And I love the final page, as TJ said, where Janeway is sitting on the bridge with her arms and legs crossed, and she's just got that look that, you know, she's ready to go out there and be the pirate queen
And anyone that gets in our way, God help them, because here we come. That's an awesome way to end this book. And I wanted to touch on something else that TJ didn't mention, and that is at the end of this book, we have a preview for what I think is one of the most awesome books, and that was Star Trek Discovery Aftermath, which we talked about. But at the end of this book, we have a preview of Aftermath, which starts off on Kronos with my favorite Klingon, Kor. And, you know, this we've already covered, but if you pick this book up and you didn't read Aftermath, there's a really nice preview on the back on the last 3-4 pages here. And it introduces Captain Pike, Laurel, Kor, and it brings you up to speed with what's been going on Discovery after the event that we see on the TV show. So that's just a bonus to this book. Overall, I really found this one shot to be very enjoyable. The story was very engaging. Once I got into it, I just kept on going. JK's artwork is just outstanding, as usual. The colors, as TJ said, the way he uses the colors is very fitting. It works really well in the Mirror Universe. And overall, I'm very, very pleased with this book as well. And being a one-shot and all, you know, I'm going to go right out and I'm going to give this one shot a 10. I couldn't find anything with it that I did not enjoy. So that would be my score for this book. Jamie?
Yeah, I mean, this book was well done. I agree with the fact that all the panels flowed nicely. I didn't really see a problem with any of the dialogue or the way the story flowed. I think Janeway definitely knows what she's doing, and they handled the story very well, and I enjoyed the ending. And, of course, the preview of Star Trek Discovery Aftermath, that's always good. But if you get that book, I would highly recommend checking that out, because Aftermath was excellent. But getting to what I would score this, I didn't see anything wrong with it either, so I'm going to go ahead and give it a solid 10. I liked it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what comes next.
Well, Eric, that really puts the pressure on you now.
Well, you know, I don't know that I'm going to go all the way to 10 on this book. So I think overall I did like this book. The art of JK is always, of course, as you guys have said, really interesting and unique. There are some panels that really knocked my socks off, and then there are some that I looked at that felt a little bit rushed to me. Most of the ones that were kind of rushed felt were some of the farther away shots, where maybe some of the proportions of some of the characters are a little weird, but all the up close shots are amazing, particularly the way he portrays both Janeway and Picardo, the Doctor, I think are pretty amazing. Probably my favorite part about this book was Kes. You know, she was probably my least favorite character in all of Voyager. And I'm a supporter of Neelix. I actually like Neelix in the original series. In this one, Kes gets to be the badass. She's the one that gets to actually show off her amazing telekinetic powers here. And she does it for, you know, with malice, which I think kind of makes her a really cool mirror version of herself. You know, able to not only manipulate matter, but apparently manipulate light. Like TJ was saying, she's able to kind of tear the Doctor apart. I think the thing that makes it not a 10 for me is the book had some weird transitions to me. There are a couple of times when, you know, one thing is happening and then they kind of switch it. Like the scene where they first talk about the replicators being weird and the gravity going out and that kind of stuff. The transition from the previous scene to that one felt a little abrupt to me. And at first, like the first time I read through the book, I was like, I'm not sure I really like that. Upon second and third reading, I liked it more and more, and I see better how the story all fits together. So it got better with multiple readings, which is good. But I love the cast part. I love the fact that the Doctor it's love and compassion shown to him by Annika that kind of pushes him over the edge into realizing that he's been mistreated all these years and it's time for him to take some action. I still don't know why Janeway was so excited about finding another human. She says it was something to be celebrated. And then, like, later on in the book, she puts Kes and Neelix in the brig rather than just executing them, which I'm pretty sure if she was a pirate in the Mirror Universe, she would have, I mean, why keep them around? It doesn't make any sense. So little story things like that are things that brought this down a level to me. So I'll say, you know, it was a good book. I'm excited to see if there's going to be some more. At the end, it says the end question mark. So hopefully, as you guys were saying, this does turn into multiple issues. I think I'll give this one about a about a 7.5 overall.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. How about you, TJ?
Yeah, I mean, a really strong book, a great one shot. I don't think it brought the level of message and complexity that we've been getting out of year 5 for me. That's just been, but you know, that's been building up for 9 issues now. So yeah, I think like an 8 is pretty solid. JK really brings it, and you know, for being a Voyager book, I'm not a huge Voyager fan. It was quite fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you should mention the pages too, TJ, because I noticed that this book was a dollar more than normal. It was $4.99 instead of $3.99, but it's the same number of pages, 24 pages, which is your typical comic length, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know if they upped the price because it cost more to produce this one or, but I mean, it's on the nice paper and that kind of stuff, but they didn't actually give us any more story than they normally would for an extra dollar.
Well, it's physically heavier than year 5.
It's got the heavy cover and it has the preview story in the back. So maybe that's what we're paying for, is the extra pages of the preview story and then the heavier cover stock.
Yeah, because it's definitely a thicker book. I'm looking at them both in my hand. It is thicker than year 5, and it is heavier than year 5. You can feel the difference in your hand when you hold it. But like you said, maybe that's the thicker paper, maybe that's the heavier stock on the cover, but it's definitely a bigger book than the other one. But again, I'm not a Voyager fan, so
there's some cool like places that they could go with this. Like, I really want to know what Mirror Tuvok's all about, because to me, you know, Mirror Vulcans, you still have to justify things with logic. And so that's always an interesting story to me. But you never get to see Tuvok in that cool outfit that he's in on the cover. He's got that like awesome like Itic triangle on his chest, and throughout the whole book he's just in his like dopey old Voyager uniform. So I kind of wanted to see him in his leathers too. I can't figure out how these people are dressed. Like, Harry Kim's dressed in leather, but then a bunch of other people are in Star Trek uniforms. It's just a motley crew. I don't know.
Well, if I remember, like I said, I apologize. I'm not a Voyager fan, but if I remember correctly, I believe we've seen Tuvok in the Mirror Universe, because I think he showed up on Tarek Nor. Didn't he?
I'm not remembering him, but I could. It's been a while, so it's very possible that I am not remembering
properly. I think
we have.
I think Tuvok crossed over and was on Tarek Nor with the attendant. I might be wrong.
I think you are right, actually. Yeah.
I think we have seen Tuvok in the Mirror Universe.
We have, like, yeah. And he was part of the, I mean, he's just like in the Mirror Universe at that time. Of course, it's the Rebellion, right? The Terran Rebellion, yeah.
Right. So I think he was. So, and unless, B'Elanna Taurus is part of, I mean, the Klingons rule the Mirror Universe, so
right.
B'Elanna Taurus, like Worf, wouldn't necessarily be on the Voyager because she would be an enemy of them, but she's half human, so maybe that's why she's there.
And she's wielding
overall,
a batleth. Yeah.
And she's got a batleth as well, which is awesome. You know how me, when I wave my batleth around, everyone wants to touch it. But, Yeah, like I said, overall, I really enjoyed the book. I really did. I enjoyed it. I thought Janeway was an awesome character. And I think by not killing off
Oh, one other thing too. If I remember correctly, Eric, you can clarify this. I think I seem to remember an episode of Voyager where Kes is supposed to only live 7 years and die, but she doesn't. And she comes back on Voyager later, and boy, oh boy, is she pissed.
Yeah.
She comes on a Voyager, and she tears the ship apart with some psychic Q abilities or something. Is that, am I remembering correctly?
You are remembering that correctly. She definitely makes a splash when she comes back, and it's the love of Neelix that brings her back from the brink. But yeah.
So we have seen her demonstrate powers like that before.
Oh yeah, we absolutely have. Yeah, this has a lot of precedent. It's just in this case, she's really going after it. Like the scene where she like crushes the guy's head that's attacking Neelix, that's brutal. She wasn't quite that brutal.
No. But again, it's the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, that's the way it should be.
So yeah, they're gonna be. But yeah, I mean, I hope that by keeping Neelix and Kes alive, because you're right, Janeway would have killed them.
She should have executed them. It's the only thing.
She should have had them executed. The only reason why I can think that she wouldn't have is because they want to have those characters in future comic books.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to say that's the only reason I can think of, because from a story standpoint, it makes sense to save Annika, right? Because she's out there looking for the Borg, and so she can pump her for information. But man, this amazing person with telekinetic powers comes on and starts messing stuff up, and you don't execute that person? What's up with that?
Yeah, it's got to be because they must be hoping that they expand it like they did with the Mirror Broken series, and yeah, they want to keep those characters so that
keep
they can have them later. Because you're right, it makes no sense to keep them alive unless they're thinking ahead where, well, we might want them for a future book, so let's not kill them. It's the only thing I can think of.
Man, I'd love to see the Doctor keep rising in power. You imagine him like a Khan type character, or a Terran Emperor type character, where he just gains so much power he can maybe he can control fleets of ships. That'd be an awesome arc.
Here's the question, though. Here's the big question that we've talked about this before, but this is a perfect segue. Mirror Universe Borg. Okay, so they're Mirror Universe, so they're going to be mirror of the Borg that we know. So does that mean that the Borg are more like what? They're not going to run around raping, pillaging, and assimilating, because that's what they do in our universe. So what, do they just go around saying, hey there, dudes, we'd like to add you to our collective and soak up your technology. Do you agree to that? Would you like to join us? And if you do, here, let me assimilate you. Because what do you think Borg would be like in the Mirror Universe, TJ? What do you think?
Oh, man.
Good question, huh?
Yeah, definitely. Maybe humanoid with light augmentation. And I don't know, just have to make friends or something.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? What do you think, Jamie? Yep. You've seen the Borg on the
yeah,
TV shows.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what they would do. They would probably just ask people to join them on their quest and just lure them in by trying to gain their trust and friendship, and then just maybe turn them into one of them.
So
just nicely request that you join the Borg, and if you don't want to, that's okay.
Yeah, so they wouldn't say resistance is futile. Resistance isn't
right.
Necessary, maybe. But,
well, there's some precedent for this. I mean, there's some beta camp. Like if you go to Memory Beta, which is, of course, deals with novels and comics and, the stuff that's sort of canon adjacent but not necessarily part of canon, they talk a little bit about the Mirror Borg, and they talk about how the Mirror Borg are actually exactly the opposite. They're super hyper aggressive, whereas you could beam onto a Borg cube, and as long as you don't make any trouble in the regular universe, you're pretty much going to be ignored. The drones are just going to walk right by you and not really care that you're there. In the Mirror Universe, when you beam onto a cube, the Borg will actively and aggressively try to assimilate anything around them and just like immediately go after them straight away. There's none of this ignoring or anything. They see everything as a threat. And the other cool thing that I think it mentions is that it talks about that the Borg ships in the Mirror Universe would be way, way bigger than the ones in the Prime Universe. Now think about that for a second. Bigger, like 10 times bigger. A cube measures 10 kilometers across on a side in the Mirror Universe. So that's a big old ship.
Yeah, definitely.
Supposedly wow. In Beta Canon, they actually in 2371 invaded the Romulan and Klingon Cardassian alliance started a whole series, much in the same way they were trying to invade the Federation. They invaded that Klingon Cardassian alliance. Some parallels. I mean, I think this is what we see in the Mirror Universe, some parallels, but some not complete opposites. Like even in the end of Mirror Mirror, Mirror Spock kind of comes to a logic that makes sense from a Prime Universe perspective, right? And in Discovery, we see people like Saval and those guys, they have very similar ways that they act across between the Terran universe and our universe. So, you know, similarities, but mirror counterpoints or mirror counterparts in some respects.
Now, I guess the big question, the ultimate question is, do Mirror Universe Borg have goatees?
or do they have like two eyepieces instead of one?
Yeah, that's the question. You know, in the Mirror Universe, we wouldn't have Locutus because that never happened. So
yeah, I mean, yeah, because we presumably when we saw the early Mirror Broken comics, they never talked about that you know he had recovered from being, and they don't know about the Borg in this book we've read about. So yeah, presumably the Borg would have kind of left things alone a little bit more than they did in our Prime Universe.
Yes, because we wouldn't have had Q snap his fingers and bring the Enterprise crew to System J25 and run into the Borg decades before they were supposed to. So the Borg wouldn't have known about them. So they wouldn't have been looking for them because they wouldn't know where to look.
You know what they need to do? They need to do a Star Trek Enterprise version of the Mirror Universe that goes back and tells the story of what's the name of the episode? Reassimilation.
Regeneration.
Regeneration, yeah.
Regeneration. One of my favorite Enterprise episodes.
So good. So good.
You know what? We'll have to mention that to JK.
There you go. Say, hey, we want regeneration in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, because if we did see an Enterprise episode in the Mirror Universe, so we know what Jonathan Archer is like and what was going on in the Mirror Universe because we saw it.
Yep.
So having, you know, a comic book set in the Mirror Universe, you know, evolving around the Borg, I think it would be a great idea. So anybody else have anything they want to say wrapping up either one of these two books, anything we didn't talk about?
Okay. I don't think so. Nope. I think we covered most things. Yeah. I will say that to me, Mirrors and Smoke was the one I was the most looking forward to for the longest period of time. And I really hope they do more of them because I think that they can kick it up a notch on the next one.
I love JK's artwork style. It's so unique. I love it.
Yeah. It's really unique. And you can't, there's nobody. Well, I guess this is a definition of unique, but nobody else does it like him, right?
No.
Like you see with his art, and you're like, oh, that's a JK book.
Yeah, you just know it. He's so unique, and I love the way he captures the looks on the faces. The characters look like the characters. I love his stuff. I really like you guys, if I just want to jump back a little bit here, you guys remember when they did the little – 5-issue story that he wrote about Data finding Spock in the Mirror Universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was
that in was that in the Discovery?
It was in a that annual, right? Or yeah, was it I in jumped, a way?
I jumped right to the back because I wanted to read JK's story first.
Yeah, which one is that in? Now I can't remember. You remember, TJ?
Yeah.
Which one that mini
story? Yeah. I'm pretty sure that was one of the mini series.
Was it in the, back of one of the mirror ones, like back up through the mirror or something? Or
yeah.
Was that in Terra Incognita? Maybe it was in Terra Incognita.
Yeah,
I
jumped right to the back because I wanted to read JK's story first about, because we never know what happened to Mirror Spock. And JK wrote a nice story involving Data going to find him, and we find out what happened, and it wasn't all that good. So, TJ, what do we have looking forward to? I know you guys have a new YouTube show that you do. Why don't you tell everyone a little bit about that? Because you talked about something on that show that's going to be of interest to us on this show.
Yeah, we're streaming around 5 o'clock on Saturday, like a 15 to 20 minute show called Freak Enterprise that details some of the cool new comics and some games and merchandise stuff coming to comic shops soon. It's stuff that you can find in Previews Magazine, which is the monthly sort of solicitation and magazine that shows all the cool new stuff coming out. So we pick a few of them each week and stream it live to Facebook. That's facebook.com/freakopolis, or it goes up on our YouTube channel on Fridays. It's youtube.com/freakopolisnetwork. There are some new stuff coming that we detailed. So next month, here, let me take a look. Next month, we are getting a bunch of new stuff. We're getting Star Trek Year 5, number 10 on February 5th, as well as Star Trek Picard. Picard number 3 is coming out January 29th, then Year 5, number 10 on February 5th, and then we're getting Star Trek Year 5 Valentine's Day special on February 12th. So that's like a one-shot. And then coming in March, we are getting some more mirror stuff, which is pretty cool. Let me take a look here.
Well, let me give you guys a little hint. You'll know it right away.
I shall leave you as you left me, as you left her, marooned for all eternity in the center of a dead planet, buried alive.
You know, any opportunity to pay that clip, and I'm going to play it. So I guess I let the cat out of the bag, DJ. You might as well tell us about it now.
Yeah, as you can tell by the clip there, on March 18th, we're getting Star Trek Hell's Mirror. Legendary writer J.M. DeMatteis returns to Star Trek for the first time in nearly 40 years, and it will be well worth the wait as he tackles two of the franchise's most popular concepts, Khan Noonien Singh in the Mirror Universe. So we're getting Mirror Khan come March, which will be very, very cool.
Yeah, now we're going to be talking about that on Comic Corner. But this is going to throw a wrench into our Picard show because now we're not going to have Picard Countdown number 3 before we see Picard, the TV series, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, Picard number 3 got pushed back a week, so we're getting it a little later than we thought we would.
Yeah, which is kind of stinks because then it's going to be after the show, and that makes no sense. Why would you do a countdown to the show and release the book after the show? Because now we're counting down to something that we've already seen. That doesn't make any sense.
Maybe somebody didn't meet a deadline. If they pushed it back late, that means that they originally planned to release it beforehand, but somebody felt like they weren't going to make it.
You know, IDW needs to work on their release dates because they do this to us all the time. But this particular one is very disappointing because the whole purpose of Countdown is to get you pumped up for the series. And why would we get invested into a comic book that's going to introduce us to the series if we're not going to read the final one until after we see the series that it's introducing us to?
It doesn't make any sense.
You know what, Jim? Just think of it as them Pulp Fictioning you the story. They're going to tell you the end before they tell you the rest of the beginning.
There you go. That's cool. So, anyways, so I don't know. We may not do Comic Corner again on the 20th then.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not going to come out till the 29th, it kind of makes sense to save 2 and 3 for each other because you're going to probably announce that we're going to do another show likely after a chance to go down to Hollywood. So.
Yeah, maybe we'll scrap that show then if we're not going to have the book in time. I'll just bump it up. So, at any rate. So I guess that's all the news we have to talk about. Again, if you're listening in Ireland, please shoot us a message on Facebook, either to Truck Talk and Beyond or the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page and say, hey guys, I'm listening in Ireland, and I'll send you an autographed Sarah Mitch Lieutenant Arium Star Trek Discovery photograph just for being a listener. Really easy. So don't dawdle. Don't fool around. Go and do that right now. I want to see our inbox lighting up when we get off the air here. And TJ, what's going on at Freakopolis Geekery?
Well, we're finally back out of the holidays, and we've got some events coming up. We've got, in this coming week, Junior D&D, HeroClix, regular D&D, Frostgrave Friday, and D&D on Saturday, as well as the start of our next painting competition, which we haven't announced the mini yet, but the first one was a hit. It was super fun to see all the Clockwork Dragons, and everybody seemed to have a really good time, so... that will be coming up very soon. And we're adding Legion to the mix, Star Wars Legion, after this past weekend. That'll be presumably about every other Sunday or so. That's our hope anyways. So you can find all that, those events and that information at facebook.com/freakopolis. You can also check us out on Twitter and Instagram and YouTube and Twitch. We're all over the place. I'd love to have you join the community. We also have copies of Mirrors and Smoke in stock. If anybody's looking for one, be happy to get you an order together and send it out your way, or have you swing by the shop to pick one up, because it's definitely worth the read. It was super fun. So lots happening at the Geekery, and so glad I got the chance to do this show.
Yeah, we went down and played Legion yesterday at the store, and we had a really good turnout. And we're going to do it again. And we're building a really good community. And hopefully we're going to be doing some OP events, perhaps, or have some OP prize support. I don't know if we'll actually run a physical OP yet, but we might run an OP game, but just not as an official OP game. But we're going to have a lot of fun with it. And what's cool about Legion is you have to assemble and paint your own characters, similar to D&D. So there's a lot of customization there. You can paint your Stormtrooper silver, like I did mine. You can paint them any way you want. You can paint your characters any way you want. And throw them on a table and have some fun with us at the Geekery. It was a lot of fun. We had Darth Vader and his Stormtroopers against Luke Skywalker and his Rebel Scum. And I have to say that my Rebel Scum, led by Luke Skywalker, came out victorious. Darth Vader was marching down the battlefield, throwing his lightsaber and choking out my troopers. Took out all my troopers except for 3. And then Luke Skywalker was able to dispatch Darth Vader. And there was a whole squad of Stormtroopers hiding behind a barricade that decided they were going to concentrate their firepower on Luke Skywalker, who was in the middle of the battlefield after he killed Darth Vader. But guess what happened? They all fired at Luke. Luke used his deflect with his lightsaber. And out of the 6 Stormtroopers, deflected 4 shots back at them and killed 4 of the 6 Stormtroopers on a deflect. And then it was just easy to take care of the rest from there. So the Rebel Scum came out victorious. I doubt it'll be that easy next time, though. But you'll have to come and find out if you want to join us. So that'll be Sunday the 19th at Freakopolis Geekery. And we have everything you need. If you just want to check out the game, if you're not sure about the game, come and watch. You know, we're going to have more than enough stuff, and we're going to keep it simple. Nothing fancy, no ATSTs or anything like that, just basic rules and basic troopers to give you a feel for the game. There's also a Clone Wars starter set available too. And the thing I want to point out about the game before we move on is if you're thinking about getting into it, get together with a friend and split the starter set. He buys the Rebels, you buy the Imperials, or vice versa, and you'll be more than happy because in this particular case, FFG is giving you a hell of a bargain because a starter set runs about $90-ish, TJ, right? $70, $80,
yeah,
something like that.
$90 for one starter set and $100 for the other. Not
yeah, that's
both,
because
but.
Well, that's because there's more battle droids in the new one. But basically, you know, a squad of stormtroopers is going to run you about $25. You get two in the starter set. A set of rebel troopers is going to run you about $25. You get two in the starter set. And you're also going to get an AT-RT for the rebels. That's going to run you around $20. And you're also going to get a pair of speeder bikes, which is going to run you about $20. And you get an exclusive Vader and Luke that are only available in the starter set. You get 10 sets of barricades. You get your dice, you get your rangefinder, and you get your movement template all in that box. So to buy all those things separately is going to cost you a lot more than $100. So it's a really good bargain to buy a starter set and split it with a friend if you're thinking about getting into the game. And I guess that's all I have. That's all I have for you guys. We're going to be doing Trek Talking and Beyond on Thursday night. We're going to be talking about the brand new, well, not brand new. We haven't seen it yet, but Short Treks, Children of Mars. And we're going to be talking about what we think is going to happen with Star Trek Picard and a few other surprises. We're going to be talking about Doctor Who Spyfall, Part 1 and Part 2, and Lost in Space Shipwreck. So we got a lot to talk about on Thursday night. Jamie, anything you want to throw in before we say goodnight?
No, but I would highly encourage anyone that's interested in Star Wars to try Star Wars Legion because it's a lot of fun. And if you're into D&D, and even if you're not, and you just like to play in any RPG game like 40K or, you know, anything like that, it's fun to paint a character. So I would encourage anyone that's interested to come and at least check it out.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. And how about you, Eric? Anything going on out in Portland you want to mention before we sign off?
Well, there's lots of Transformers going on this weekend. If you're playing that game, I know it's gaining popularity here in the Portland area. So we've got Transformers All Commons Pauper Tournament at Red Castle Games here in Portland on Saturday afternoon. That's at 6406 Southeast Foster. And then on Sunday, we've got some more Transformers play at Guardian Games, 345 Southeast Taylor. So Saturday and Sunday afternoons, lots of Transformers action. And then Sunday night, I fly down to Hollywood, baby.
That's right. And we're going to get a live report from you guys about the red carpet premiere of Star Trek Picard, the first two episodes in Hollywood, California. That's going to be exciting. I look forward to hearing what you guys got to say about that. And with that, we wrap up our another issue of Comic Corner presented by Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York. I want to say thank you to TJ for hanging out with us and talking comic books. Thank you, TJ.
Thanks for having me.
And I also want to say thank you to Jamie, my awesome daughter, who's calling from all the way in the other room. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight, Jamie.
No problem.
And thanks to Eric, who's out in Portland. Thank you, Eric.
You bet. Always great to be here. And we miss you, Charles. See you next time.
And we miss Charles, but Charles is getting some dental work. But he will be with us on Thursday night for Trek Talk and Beyond. So with that, guys, I want to say run off to your local comic book shop and support them. Buy some comic books at your local comic book shop. Find your friendly local gaming shop and pick up Star Wars Legion or D&D or whatever games you're interested in. And please show your local shop some support because, you know, I got to say, there's nothing like holding the physical comic book in your hand. I know you can download them digitally, but there's something about the ink and the weight of the book in your hand that's just different than digital download. So if you're near a local comic book shop, show them some support and go and pick up a book or two there because they could really use your support. Same thing with the games, you know. Find a game that you and your friends are interested in. Go to your local game shop and see if you can get a community built up there and enjoy it. We're doing that with Legion right now at Freakopolis Geekery. We did it with Star Trek Attack Wing, and it's a lot of fun. When you get together, it becomes more than a game. It's a gathering of friends. And you'll talk, like we were talking about Baby Yoda, do the hand thing. And I had on my Baby Yoda Met shirt when we went to play. And it becomes more than a game. It becomes a social event, a social gathering, and it's a lot of fun. So see if you can get something like that set up at your friendly local game shop. So that's all I have to say. So thank you for listening to Comic Corner. And please remember, if you're listening in Ireland, shoot us a message or get yourself an autographed picture. So make that happen as well. And we'll talk to you guys all again on Thursday night for Truck Talking and Beyond. Thanks for being with us. Have a good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Night, y'all.
Good night, guys.
Let's see what's out there.